because we want you to stay awake physically, and this will help you spiritually. Now, staying awake sometimes is very, very difficult to do, isn't it? You'll recognize this if you're a driver, and especially a driver who maybe has the opportunity of traveling long distance. Now, years ago, when I was younger, and perhaps some of you in the audience, when you were younger, you could go from here to the south of England with no trouble, without a break. And you'd head on down the motorway, and you'd be alert and alive, and ready to meet up with all sorts of emergencies, and you'd drive quite well all the way down, non-stop to the south of England. But if you're like me now, when I get to Stafford on the motorway, you're beginning to feel as if you've had enough. And it's difficult to try and keep your concentration as you used to years ago. And that's how it can be in the truth sometimes, when we've been with it a long time, that we grow older, not only physically, but spiritually too. We become very experienced in the truth, and we become very sort of fat spiritually. We can live off of that fat, can't we? And we can get by on lots of things, and when an emergency does come, sometimes we can cope with it if it's not too big one, but other times it can catch up with us, simply because we're only sort of half awake. So the purpose of the talk today is to try and help us all to see various ways in which we can stay awake in the truth, spiritually speaking. We say, don't we, that the new ones that come along, and then they really take to the truth. They're alive, aren't they? They're spiritually awake, and they sometimes put us to shame because they seem to make strides so fast that we have a job to keep up with them. They want to do this, they want to do that, they get baptized, they want to auxiliary pioneer, and before you know where you are, they're in the regular pioneer ranks. And that's lovely to see, isn't it? But as we said earlier, that some of us who have been in the truth for a long time, we were like that years ago, but somewhere along the line we've become drowsy and a little sort of half-hearted, and maybe dozing a little bit as we go down that sort of motorway of spirituality. And the longer you go, it can become more difficult because other things come along, don't they? Like physical ailments, and our physical body doesn't work like it used to. And as you do get older, there is the tendency more to need more rest. We can't do what the young ones do, and we would love to do that. And that goes along with what the Council in Ecclesiastes tells, isn't it? Do it now while you're young, while you've got your strength, because there will come days when you look around and you think, well, I just wish I could do that again. And that's the way we're made, and that's the way it will always be in this system of things. But there's lots of little things that you and I can work on to help us to stay spiritually alert, vigilant, and awake. Now, in the scriptures, we're going to have a look at a few, because the scriptures counsel us time and again that we are living in difficult times. We know that, and it can become difficult to stay spiritually alert and awake. And that's why constantly throughout the scriptures, you'll find that we're counseled and encouraged to stay awake. As we sang, stand firm and grow mighty spiritually. Our first one is in Romans chapter 13. Most of the scriptures that we'll be looking at today are very familiar with us. We know them. Some of them we may be able to recite without even looking at the words. But if we can try and get you to think a little bit about them, then we've achieved something. If we can get you to think that, you know, well, am I dozing, or am I really awake as I should be, then we'll achieve more. In verse 11, it speaks there about you people knowing the season. Well, what people are we talking about? us, isn't it? It's within the congregation. Paul was writing not to those outside, but to those dedicated, baptized brothers and sisters in the tree. He said, you know the season, that it is already the hour for you to awake. So he was speaking to spiritual people, spiritually minded people, and yet here he is telling them to be awake. Awake from sleep or slumber, you see. For now, our salvation is nearer than at the time when we became believers. And that's true with us all. If you came into the truth yesterday, the time is that much nearer now, isn't it? Because you can never go back to yesterday. If you came in last year, or 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or longer, some of you have been in the truth for many, many years. And it is nearer now than it ever was when you first came along and joined Jehovah's people. And as it says, the night is well along. And if any of us have ever worked on the night shift, I think we're all well aware, aren't we, that when the night is well along and you're coming near to the end of your shift, you're not waking up because it's getting near morning, whereas everybody else is. You're finding it much more difficult to carry on because you've gone through the whole night working. The night is well along and it becomes increasingly more difficult to stay awake. So physically, spiritually, whatever way you look at it, it is certainly very difficult to stay awake in the truth today. But it isn't that difficult that it isn't a hurdle that none of us can overcome. Jehovah says that his load is light. Jesus echoed that, didn't he? And it is true that if we do Jehovah's will, Jehovah's way, then it will be made light for us. He will help us to stay awake. He's not going to allow us to slumber and drift off into obscurity. But it all comes back and hinges upon us. And that's why the counsel is, in verse 13, as in the daytime, look, let us walk decently. So we have to do something, don't we? Walking means exercise. Walking means effort. You and I have to do something to keep ourselves spiritually awake. Going back to our illustration again about the car driver on the motorway, if you find yourself, after so many miles, just dozing off because the road is so straight, not much traffic around, not much to think about apart from the countryside that goes by, and you're there, put on the accelerator, no braking, no gear changing, nothing at all, and you get to the point where you're driving one-handed type of thing, that's the time when you get so relaxed, isn't it, that you can easily lose your concentration and go off to sleep. And so it is in the truth. So we need to stay awake, stand firm, grow mighty, be vigilant. And again in the scriptures, we could look up half a dozen scriptures in the Christian Greek scriptures to show that we need to keep spiritually awake. And it uses different terminology. You've heard me use some already. Remember the one in 1 Peter 4, verse 7? It tells us there to be vigilant. Vigilant with a view to prayers. Isn't that staying awake? Anyone who's vigilant knows what's going on. And they're aware of what's happening. So again, it shows that we must do something. As we said on that motorway, the thing to do when you feel yourself going into drowsiness is stop the car, perhaps, get out, and have a walk round. Do something. I know in the past when I felt myself going off to sleep in those situations, I've been pinching myself and really, you know, making yourself do something rather than just sitting there doing nothing, because that's the way we just go off and get lulled into sleep. And our lives are involved in this. We've read and heard about people that have gone to sleep on motorways, haven't we, where they finished up. Crashing the car, taking someone else's life with them. Terrible situations, terrible tragedies can come about because a person physically goes to sleep. So it can be, in a spiritual sense, that we can nod off to sleep, and not only our lives are involved, but our fellow brothers and sisters too. especially if we have a responsible position within the congregation. Because if we nod off, those of us who are elders, then others' lives can be terrifically involved, can't they? Because we are not doing what we should be doing. We'll hear a little bit more about that later. Another one, Matthew 26 and verse 41. Keep on the watch and pray continually. Notice our New Year's text is all about prayer, isn't it? Rejoice in the hope ahead. That's lovely, isn't it? Thinking about the hope ahead. But what have we got to do? We've got to persevere in prayer, which means effort, doesn't it? So in everything that we do in staying spiritually awake, we have to do something. It all comes back to you and I at the end of the day. No one else can do it for us. We sometimes think, well, so-and-so can help me, which is true to a degree, but at the end of the day, it all comes back to us, doesn't it? We're the ones that have said to Jehovah, I am dedicating my life to you. I am going to do this, do that, and the other. And it's up to us as to whether we do it. So it requires effort. 1 Thessalonians 5:6 also says, let us stay awake, keep our senses. 1 Peter 5:8, keep your senses, be watchful. And then 1 Corinthians 10:12, as I think the song was based on, let him think that he is standing, beware that he does not fall. So if you think things are going along nicely, and you're in a comfortable little corner, a little niche in the truth, and it's just how you like it, and it's just the way you want it to be, and there's the time we need to beware, because there's an opening for Satan to get into to make us fall. Now going back into the Hebrew scriptures, you'll find there that this sort of staying awake counsel, an idea was there long before the days of Jesus and the apostles. And people's lives were involved in its state even in those days. Just let's have a look at one. Isaiah 42, 18. Now this terms it slightly different, but when you look at it and analyse it, you realise he's talking about exactly the same thing. It's regarding the nation of Israel who turned away from Jehovah. They weren't doing what they should be doing, or should have been doing. And he's pleading with them, look there, that hear you deaf ones. And we know the nation of Israel weren't all physically deaf. They were like we are. They perhaps had a few deaf individuals amongst them, but generally speaking, the nation had good ears. They knew what was what, and they listened quite well. Hear you deaf ones, he's describing them, and look forth to see you blind ones. Verse 20, it was a case of seeing many things, but you did not keep watching. And down in verse 25, look, it says there, little phrase, near halfway through, that he took no note. The nation took no note of what was happening at that time. But we know what happened to them. Many of them, thousands, a million of them, lost their lives, didn't they? Because they were overthrown, and the others were taken off into captivity into Babylon. And what a life they had, one of slavery. So at that time, because they took no note, because they were deaf to the instructions of Jehovah, to his word, and they didn't want to see, they had eyes, but they just didn't want to see it. They knew all the whys and wherefores and what the responsibilities were, but they didn't measure up to them. And because of that, many of them lost their lives. And if they didn't, they were taken into captivity. Jeremiah 4 and verse 22. Again, another prophecy sent to them exactly over the same message, the same reason. Describes them as being a people that is foolish, and of me they have taken no note. That's Jeremiah 4 and verse 22. In Noah's day, if you go back to Noah's day, it was exactly the same there. Isn't that what Jesus said? Just as in the days of Noah, so it will be in the Son of Man. They were eating and drinking and marrying and doing all the things that you and I do today, isn't it? And what is it? They took no note, and the flood came and swept them away. So it's been no different down through time. The council has been there because Jehovah knows that we're all a fallen flesh, aren't we? We're all prone to do that. We're all prone to take the line of least resistance. And you find this not just in the truth, but in any sort of community in life, in any area of life that wish to go. You may find this at work or at school, you youngsters. There's always a little Johnny at the back, isn't it? It will sit in the back row and think, well, if I'm back here, teacher won't notice, you see. Or at work, he'll tuck himself up a corner and think, well, if I'm up here, nobody will notice me, you see. And the day goes by and we don't have so much to do. Those are the type of people that in a physical life are sort of going to sleep, aren't they? They don't want to accept responsibility. And we find that even in the truth. You'll always find it in congregations like we have here in our congregation. No different. We're all the same, aren't we? We're all flesh. And we're all imperfect. And we're all prone to doing or wanting to do the things that are different or, you know, than what Jehovah wants us to do. And we all want to fuck ourselves up a little corner sometimes. And yet, we shouldn't be like that. This is what the scriptures tell us and warn us about. To put ourselves headlong into the truth. Be whole-souled. Be awake. Be alert. Be vigilant to the things that are going on. And there's a lot going on in the truth at this particular time. Things are changing. The scriptures tell us that the scene of the world is changing. And that's true, isn't it? It changes so fast. News, we have a job to keep up with it. You know, Jehovah's organization always changes, not with it, but to combat it. That way, it keeps us alert, it keeps us alive, it keeps us on our toes. And so we could go on and on in saying, well, look, keep awake, stay awake, do everything that we shouldn't. And I'm going to stand here for the rest of the talk saying, well, do it, do it, do it. But that's easy for me to do that, isn't it? To tell you what to do. But it's also knowing how to do it. Because sometimes, especially if we're new in the truth, we don't always know what to do. And if we're very young, you see, it's one thing being told, isn't it? But another thing to be shown how to do it. And that's what we want to try and do for the rest of the talk, is to not just keep preaching at you and telling you what to do, but to show you how. So that's the purpose of the talk from now on. Now in this outline, I've got about 14 different points here that highlight ways in which we can stay awake. What I'm going to do is just read straight through them. And then we'll go back and pick a couple out, because it's impossible to concentrate on the entire amount. So we'll do that. It says there are a number of things we can do to keep spiritually awake. Keep up with the food at the proper time from Jehovah's organization. That's study and things like that, isn't it? And coming to meetings, which this goes on to say. It says determine not to miss a single spiritual meal, both private study, meeting attendance, are urgent for all. There's nothing new here, brothers. It's all things we've heard before. And this is why sometimes we can sort of nod off, because we sort of think, well, I've heard all this before. Follow theocratic ways, procedures, and policies. Not always easy to do, but it can be done. Recognizing the organization that Jehovah is using. Keep awake by finding your place in God's arrangement. That isn't that little corner up there, by the way. We're not talking about that. But finding our place where we can work for Jehovah wholeheartedly. Do not quibble about assignments and arrangements. I think we're all guilty of that at some time, aren't we? Perform well whatever assignments you have. Trust God's angels to remove and replace where necessary. When things aren't being done in the congregation as you think that they might be or should be done. Or you might think, well, why don't the elders do something about this? Well, leave it to Jehovah and the angels. If there's anything wrong, they'll sort it out. And they'll make the elders sort it out as well. They have ways and means. Again, coming back to this new text here, persistence in prayer shows you are awake to spiritual things. So there's another way. Jesus was outstanding in his constancy regarding prayer. Keep awake by field ministry. And here's a rare one in any public talk, financial contributions. You don't hear that very often in public talks. We always say that there's people come to the meetings, there's no collection, no mention of money, the seats are free, you're free to come and go, and there is a contribution box. But here in the talk, it's highlighting there are various ways, this is one of them, that we can keep spiritually awake, is by being aware of the need for financial contributions. Jehovah has done much for us through his organization, and we can show love for him by full support with our time and finances. And then another one, look, stay awake by showing love to all and act loyally. Sometimes it's easier to show love to some in the congregation than others. We naturally have an affinity for one another. Certain types of personality seem to gel with others, don't they? And it's easy to get along with brother so-and-so and sister so-and-so. But goodness me, I find it ever so difficult to talk to sister so-and-so. And there's an area perhaps that we can think about. Stay awake by being respectful and obedient. And that's something that is very important because it's completely the opposite in the world today. Respect for all authority and obedience to it has absolutely gone by the wayside, hasn't it? Refrain from criticism and careless talk. So there are the main points, but as we said, we can't go into them all. Well, so what we're going to do is to try and just highlight one or two little areas which we could enlarge on or put the magnifying glass on. So shall we do that? We mentioned about determining not to miss a single spiritual meal. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 3, well known to us all, I think. It's in those happinesses, or beatitudes as some people call them. Sermon on the Mount, chapter 5 of Matthew. Happy are those conscious of their spiritual need, since the kingdom of the heavens belongs to them. And we're encouraged to do that, aren't we? What does it mean to be conscious of our spiritual need? Well, if you have the footnote Bible, like I've got here, you look down the bottom, and it speaks about those who are beggars, beggars for the spirit. Now, just at the bottom of our road where we live, there's a little area there, it's quite busy, and there's a man who parades up and down there daily. He's there non-stop every day of the week. You can go by there any time, any day, and he's there begging. And he has no shame at all. And if you refuse him once, he'll catch you another day and he'll ask you again. And you see him there, backwards and forwards, and he'll even, when the traffic lights turn red and the cars stop, he'll even go over to one of the cars, if they've got their window open, and just say, can you give me, have you got 10p for me? I need it to help me get to Hamley or something like that. And he does this all the time. And I look at him and I think, well, you know, fancy being like that. Surely we're in a welfare state, there's no need for that. I don't know what his circumstances are. He may be homeless, I don't know where he comes from. He just appears there and he carries on his little job. Now that's only in this country, but if you go abroad, many of you have been abroad, haven't you? And they go even further than that, don't they? People do all sorts to their bodies, don't they, to make people feel sorry for them, and they have no shame at all in breaking limbs and distorting their features and all such kind to make themselves look as pitiful as they possibly can because they're going to lead a life of a beggar. And they tell us that it is very profitable being a beggar. In some lands, people can make in this country, they reckon, up to in places like London, £100 a day being a beggar. That's more than you earn a day, isn't it? Most of you. simply because they have no shame. Now, bringing it round to a spiritual sense, how can we show that we, or as it describes, they're beggars for the Spirit? It really means having no shame whatsoever in the truth. Never hold back in demanding, really, what your requirements are in the way of spiritual food. And a good mirror to this is analyze yourself and ask yourself, what am I like? Am I really a beggar for the Spirit? What am I like when the magazines come? And maybe you have an announcement here, and announcements every time there's a delivery, and the brother who's giving the announcements on a Tuesday or Thursday, whenever you meet, he says that we have new magazines tonight, brothers, and he may hold them up and say, you know, that they're this and that, and lovely, beautiful magazines. Jehovah's doing so well now through his organization, and he's presenting us with a marvelous, appealing literature. He holds them up and says, we're able to get your magazines tonight, and we would like you to get them straight after the meeting. And they're still there 2 or 3 weeks later, your magazines. This is the way we can stay spiritually awake, is by going and getting them straight away. Not for the benefit of the poor old brother who's on the job and he's wondering, well, are they going to come and fetch my magazines or not? But because we need to devour that spiritual food. We need to keep up to date with everything that Jehovah is providing us. Really, if we're not on top in these things, then what we're saying is to Jehovah is like saying to a housewife who lays out a beautiful meal for us and saying, well, there you are, it's yours for the taking, and you're saying, well, I don't feel like that today. I've just had some chips down the road. These are little signs and areas that show up as to whether or not we're really conscious of our spiritual need. All right, you go and get them. You say, well, I'll go and get them. As soon as they come, I'm there, I'm the first one there. But what do you do with them when you get them to me? Do they go in a cupboard somewhere and stay there until the day comes when you're in the ministry and you think, oh, those new magazines, I better get them, because we're going to want them. That's no good at all. We need to read them and digest them. Know what's in them, simply to show not only that we are conscious of our spiritual need, but to encourage others to become conscious of their spiritual need too. So can you see what we said earlier about our lives being involved and other people's too? It's not just elders and brothers in the congregation, is it? It's us and people out there. There are still people out there sighing and crying and groaning over the detestable things that are going on in this world. I've no doubt you've met many when they've said, I don't know what the world's coming to. Well, if you know what's in your magazines and in your literature, in the reasoning book, all these lovely provisions, because you've devoured it, you've eaten it, like that scroll that John was given. It was sweet to him, wasn't it? And it's sweet to others as well who want to receive it. But it's also bitter for those who don't. But what a wonderful provision that is from Jehovah. So are we conscious of our spiritual need? A little question that we could just ask in passing. You notice the kingdom ministry has changed? Did you notice that? Some of you are nodding. If you're thinking, what is he talking about? What does he mean? Then I'd advise you to go and have a look, because you might be dozing off spiritually if you're not aware of what's happening in the kingdom ministry at this moment in time. We also mentioned, don't quibble about assignments and arrangements. Now in Romans chapter 12, which this text is taken from, if you just go to the previous verses, this is from verse 12, isn't it? Romans 12 and verse 4. Notice this text is taken from verse 12, rejoice in the hope, and then persevere in prayer. But if you go into verse 4, what does it speak about there? But just as we have in one body many members, but the members do not all have the same function, and then in 6 to 8, he goes on to describe that we all have gifts, don't we? differing according to the undeserved kindness given to us, whether prophesying, so forth and so forth, faith, ministry, teaching, exhorting, all these different gifts. Now sometimes, if a particular brother or sister doesn't have a particular gift, and we think, well, you know, that's a bit hard going, I can't seem to listen to them. That's an area, perhaps, where we could be quibbling, couldn't we? Or complaining, especially about assignments. You might get speakers that come here from other congregations, and some are better than others, aren't they? And you think, when you get one that's not as good, you think, well, why is it that that speaker can't give such a good talk? Why is he giving a talk? Well, should we quibble about that? Not as individuals, should we? The elders within the congregation will take careful note of what's happening in the circuit with regard to visiting speakers and the standard of talks and so forth and the standard of teaching. But it's not for us to quibble about it, is it? And what about those assignments, you see, that we get from the Theocratic Ministry School overseer? We've all had them, haven't we? And we look at the slip and we think, oh yeah, Leviticus. And you go home and you look it up. I can't give this. I'd be highly embarrassed to give this. Whatever has he given me this one for? And so you go back and you say, look, brother, I just cannot give this. It's impossible, you see. Well, should we be like that? I'm sure very, very few brothers ever do that. Sometimes if a mistake is made, you might get an assignment like that, which is dealing with marital problems or certain areas within that sphere, where it's given to youngsters, then that would be wrong, wouldn't it? Sometimes that has been known, and it would be right for a youngster to sort of, through their mother and father, to take it back and say, well, look, can we have another one? But that would only be on a rare occasion. But if we're given an assignment in the congregation, especially in the theocratic ministry, shouldn't we try every effort to try and carry it out? Perhaps that's one that Jehovah's looked at us and said, well, there's an area that they need to learn about, that they need to understand a little more. They know nothing about that particular area in the scriptures. Now, that's a good one for them to have. We'll make sure they get that. That way they're going to learn. So as if we always get the easy ones, the ones we know, the ones we've done before, we think, oh, I can handle this, you never learn anything, do we? So isn't it good for us, rather than quibbling, rather than criticising, and recognising that we've all got different abilities, and perhaps if you haven't got one of those abilities there, of the body that it speaks about, you see, every part plays a part, doesn't it, on our physical body, and so we are in a congregation, we all have a part to play. And that's the way we grow, you see, and we mature, and we become better able, equipped to go out and tell others. Gives us confidence as well if we know what we're talking about. That way we can learn. So never quibble about assignments and arrangements. Never criticize brothers and sisters in the congregation. If you've got something to say about anybody, make sure it's good. There's nothing wrong with gossip as long as it's healthy, isn't it? Rather than degrading, why not upgrade brothers and sisters for a change? Perform well whatever assignments you have. Have you noticed the watchtower that we're studying today? You've all got it with you, I think. Just turn to page 26. Turn to page 26, you'll see what it's about. It's about a brother, Roy, who has always advocated sticking close to Jehovah's organization, God's organization. It is life story, and it is quite interesting reading. And again, it's a test of your alertness, your vigilance, whether or not you're spiritually awake or not. Is this the first time you've seen that article? If it is, then you need to think carefully about what we're talking about today. And I hope everyone here has read it already, because that shows your spirit. Under the heading on page 26 of Bethel Service, look. he applied to be a pioneer, and he also applied to be, or served at the headquarters of Jehovah's Witnesses in New York in Bethel. And in 1935, he was invited to go along to Bethel. And he went in an old car, a Model A Ford. There's a Model T Ford on that one on the left there. That must be another one he had during his work. And he said straight away, look, I was put to work splitting wood. Do you see that in this paragraph on the right-hand side? The next day I was told to report to the dairy barn to help milk cows. Then he worked in the garden. I also took care of the bees, harvested honey for the family. And in 1953, I was transferred to the cheese-making department. And here's a spiritual brother thinking he's going into the battle to do all sorts of spiritual things. And yet, these were his assignments. There's a lesson here for you and I. Down the bottom there, in page 26, it speaks about another modest man who became a role model for me, who was named John, now a member of the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses. And he's been quoted over the years as saying, it's not so much where you serve, but whom you serve, that is truly important. Can you see that? And then you've got him on the right-hand side, look, making cheese. This is Brother again. That's not Brother. In 1983, from 1953, after 30 years of making cheese, they changed his job. I think many of you are ahead of me already. He said, I was given a job change and I began working in landscaping. How nice. While being interviewed some time ago, I was asked what I thought about being given a job change after 30 years of making cheese. And he said, well, it didn't bother me. I noted frankly because I didn't like making cheese anyway. So can you see the point of that, brothers? If we're given an assignment, whatever it is, perform it well. Don't think, well, I would make a better magazine servant than that brother over there, and I don't like it on the accounts. Why do they always use me as a hall servant? Why am I always given the responsibility of looking after the microphones? I've done this for years. Well, think about this brother here. He made cheese for years, and he didn't like the job one bit. Now, isn't that strange? And you know why? Because he had the right attitude. He didn't quibble. He didn't moan. He didn't criticize. He just got on with the job. And isn't that a little area that we can all work on somewhere? It comes down to that little bit of territory even, doesn't it, that we're given in the ministry. And we say, I'm not there again. I worked that last time. I know that person in that house there. Oh, I called on them and I just don't get on with them. You see, we can go on in all kinds of areas, can't we, in the truth? But what an attitude to have. And I thought this was a lovely expression here, look. On page 27, just about a third of the way down on the right-hand side, he says, as I have opportunity, I encourage new ones at Bethel to take advantage of all privileges service they're given and to learn to be content and happy. And just in the next paragraph at the end, he says, be happy and content in your present circumstances and blossom in a spiritual way in the soil where you are planted. Isn't that a lovely expression? Doesn't that show a man who is spiritually alive and alert and awake? And isn't that how we should be? Wouldn't the congregation flow and move along forward so much better and more unitedly if we all have that lovely attitude to Jehovah's service, no matter what it is? We can't all be public speakers. We can't all be giving the public talk at the district assembly, can we? There's only one can do it at a time. We all have a role to play. We're all part of that body, aren't we, that we looked at. What a lovely description it is. And some of us don't look quite as good as the other part, do we? And some of us seem to be more awkward than others. I mean, some people's feet, when you look at them in areas like that, they think, well, why did Jehovah make them like that? They're so ugly. And yet, without them, where would we be? And isn't that how the congregation is? Some of us seem to be awkward in the truth, new in the truth, inexperienced. Others seem to be so polished, don't they? And they could cope with any situation. But isn't that a little part that we all have to play? That's how Jehovah wants things, isn't it? And that's how his whole organization worldwide is moving ahead. That's why we're awake. Jehovah's organization is moving, and Christendom's lagging behind. In fact, they're falling apart, aren't they? Because they are spiritually dead. My brother Rutherford, I think it was, years ago, described them as dumb dogs. Doctors have been.
Hello, hello, testing. Let me just have a little look. A group of leading dictionary publishers and universities are participating in a government-funded research project to compile a national treasury of the English language. For the first time, dictionary writers and language researchers will be able to show how words are used in ordinary, everyday conversation. The British Market Research Bureau, an independent market research agency, are asking a large cross-section of people around the country to help with this task by recording their own conversations. These will then be transcribed on computer and built into a database which will contain several million words. Very good.
You think to yourself now, what am I giving in the contribution box now as compared to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago? It may be the same, and it's maybe as much as you can afford. Well, if that's so, then that's grand, isn't it? It's like the widow's mite, you see. But when you think of the way inflation has eaten away at everything, we go into this superstore, don't we? We go to that garage, we have this job done at home, and the prices have all illustration on the awake money problem.
Oh yeah, we're all right. We plugged in.
It's when I went to Poland, it's not 2 or 3 years, it was 1973. And I was just coming in into the truth, and the one witness was with me, and we were going in a big town like Krakow, you know. We were going one way, and there was a couple coming to meet us, like, you know, in on the road. And he was just wearing jeans and no shirt, but a big wooden cross on his chest, just reaching really across his chest, a wooden cross. And then safety pin in his nose, and 3 safety pins attached to one another to his ears. And this witness with me walking down, she says, just look at this couple. And the girl was the same dress. She had the top on, you know, but again, all sort of queer looking. And this witness with me, she says, just look at these two that coming again to meet us. And I said, yes, and I looked and I said, look at the cross. And she says, yes, it used to be, they used to hang the criminals on the crosses, and now the crosses hang on the criminals.
Isn't that lovely?
And now the crosses hang on the criminals instead of criminals on the crosses.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes, I was going to say, sometimes I'm mentally a bit minded. Oh, well, the last time I went, sometimes I go to Wales, to Blaenau Ffestiniog, or to Dolgellau congregation. Mm. I have to leave about 6:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And that's when I went with Harold, I took Harold, you know,
and Yvonne, and Yvonne's daughters, the last time they went. And this is how Alan and Yvonne come to know each other.
Who is Alan and Yvonne?
Alan Machin.
Oh, I see. So it was you that got them together. Oh,
but it's a beautiful run, you know. It's a lovely road.
I know that kind. I know that road. You know where we went, me and my husband, always? Port Maddock.
Oh, yes.
Black Rock Sands.
Yes, I've been there lots of times.
We used to camp there.
I've
got a tent, steel tent with two bedrooms and everything. And I'm thinking of getting rid of it because Mary said she doesn't like going camping.
Oh, well, I've got a tent, two bedrooms.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I like camping.
Yeah, we used to love camping.
Oh, often in the summer, John Atfield and myself and one or two of us go, you know.
Yeah.
So next time we go, you can come with us.
It's in tent.
In tent.
Oh no, you can't sleep in the same tent. I've got my tent. You'll sleep with me. You don't go sleep with them. No, I love camping. We've been camping for about, more than 30 years.
Yes, I
like. We used to have a boat as well. And then when his brain cells started to, you know, he had that Alzheimer's disease.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't manage to think, and I'd never learned how to manage the engine. So we got rid of the boat, and then our son, he's got a big boat. He's got a real speed boat, real big one. And Julian, he's got a smaller speed boat. So both of the boys go there. When we go camping, we always have a good time because it's all a family affair, like, you know. Always get together and go on a boat, fishing, having fresh mackerels, come back and clean them up and fry them straight fresh from the sea. Never tasted fresher fish than